Today is Thursday. It is February 15th. It's the day after Valentine's Day, 2018. It's 11:15 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record each week in the studios at WGN Radio. Please tune me in weekdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3 and Saturday mornings from 10 to noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio every weekday afternoon at noon.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here in WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the fatalistic columnist for the Tribune.
Who called you that this week, Eric?
What's that?
Somebody called you that?
Nobody ever calls me any of these adjectives. I make them up on my way up here.
Oh, I think they call you some of these things.
Maybe it's coincidence.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute, but let's start with the obvious, guys. As I said, today is the 15th. Another mass shooting took place at a school yesterday, the 14th. That's 18 school shootings in the 45 school days of this year. The old AR-15 was the weapon. A mentally imbalanced, angry orphan was able to get one. He's not alone. The NRA estimates that there are more than 8 million of those AR-15s in American hands today. This Valentine's Day massacre occurred on the heels of a longtime criminal shooting to death, Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer. I should have something more novel to say about all of this other than we are all sad and that the solutions to these things to me seem unreachable. The president's tweet calling on neighbors and classmates to do more to report instances of erratic behavior in the case of the Florida shooting. He said report that again and again is about all we've got, shy of radical new gun laws. Steve, where do you start with all of this?
Well, it's, we've been doing this a long time, and this week has been, I don't know if I'm getting older or what's happening, but it was much more impactful. I mean, I think there's a profound sadness to think of a commander who is not in a position to do what he did and to pursue a guy just because he heard a radio call and lost his life in an instant like that. It's profoundly sad. And then to look at what's happening in the school, you know, the thing about what happened in the school is that this was a young man apparently who was on the radar and who the school had taken steps to do the right thing. And I don't know where, I mean, I don't know, obviously I have feelings about the availability of guns, but as far as stopping someone who you've recognized, you know, they recognized him, but he didn't go far enough for them to take him off the street or anything like that, and it's just a haunting situation.
There have been stories lately in the news about school shootings that have been arrested in advance, right? They've found kids who are planning things and they stop them. So there is more vigilance, but I mean, at a certain point, all the vigilance in the world is not going to stop someone with that kind of weapon who wants to just charge through a school like that.
You had a guy saying yesterday, in the hours afterwards, a student saying, you know, we used to joke that he was going to come back and shoot people, and now he did. I think we all know people in our lives who we assign that to or worry about that sometime. But what do you do about that? You can't look into the future and, you know, arrest someone as a preemptive strike. You can't do that.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm frankly really angry about this now. I'm finally to the point where people of this country, can we have a real conversation about real solutions to these issues? Because it's obviously what we're doing doesn't friggin' work. Okay, thoughts and prayers are wonderful things.
They're not wonderful things in this case because they're a dodge.
I disagree completely. But that's not the point I want to make. The point I want to make is this: in my comic strip Prickly City, I had the temerity to say, "Can we at least talk about gun control?" Didn't advocate anything, and my commenters at Go Comics went bananas. And just, no, we can't, you want to take my guns away, you want the government, blah, blah. We have to have these conversations. Mental health is one. Can you take this guy off the street and have him, even though he doesn't want to be, evaluate him for 48 hours? Is that a reasonable thing to do? Can you say, how did this guy get guns? I still don't know. I have not heard of...
There are sources today saying that he purchased it legally.
I heard the sources, but what does that... I mean, right. Who are the sources and what does that mean? How did he get his hands on these guns?
What do you mean? Scott, how could you ask that question? It's legal to buy them.
Not him. Not if you have mental health issues. If the background checks actually work.
No, I'm not. Does he have documented mental health issues?
Well, I think
can I go back?
Go ahead.
Because I'm all for thoughts and prayers. I don't want to be misunderstood. I am sick and tired of people the day after a tragedy offering their thoughts and prayers and not another thing, a damn thing, you know. And in that way, it is a dodge. When you stand there and you say, "My thoughts and prayers are with these people," and you do nothing else, to hell with you. That's what I mean.
On Twitter, someone said that
thoughts and prayers are the air guitar of solutions.
Yeah,
right. Well, I don't think they're meant to be solutions. In many instances, I think if you lose a father or a mother, and someone says, "Our thoughts and prayers are with you," is that, well, screw you, you're not helping me?
No, I'm talking about the guys. I'm talking about the politicians who go on TV and say that, and then they don't do anything.
Okay,
else.
Like the Mark Rubios down in Florida, who have, you know, thought and prayer every single time.
Right.
The fact is, there's an every single time now, and this is becoming a thing.
Yeah, so maybe you ought to stop thinking and praying about it and start doing something about it. I mean, really, that's the point here.
You can do both.
Well, you can do both, fine. All right, but I'm with Steve on this. Thoughts and prayers, to me, are beyond feckless. It's a dodge, and I want them to see to do something. So, you know, I think in all of our minds, we've got this little checklist of things we can do, like, all right, make it hard for people with mental illness to get a gun, or put schools on lockdown, or arm the students and arm the teachers, and all of these things that I think we would all agree just won't solve the problem. Literally, how do you, for instance, flag people that you think might be a danger to others? How do you do that? And what do you do about them? I mean, can you imagine if we, and maybe we'll go there, but just imagine the pushback there's going to be when somebody says, "I think Scott Stantis is just unstable and we should deny him his Second Amendment right." Good luck to you on that. Now, here's one thing, though, that I think is a box we haven't seriously tried to check. Limit the sale of some of these weapons. Just limit the sale. And maybe that won't work, and then we'll uncheck that box. But why are we so afraid to give it a try? I don't know. 8 million AR-15s in this country.
Can you go back to the numbers of school shootings? What was your number?
18.
18, and this is the
45 days.
These aren't all, shooter on the loose kind of situations. There can be just, you know, one-off thing in the
parking
lot. Were
they shootings in schools?
Yeah, but they were on school grounds.
Okay,
but
that's enough for me.
I know, but they I'm saying that it's not like we've had 20 rampages.
No, I understand that. But so 18 shootings in or near a school in the first 45 days of the year. Throw out the weekends.
Well, that's I think it's 45 school days.
Okay, four school days, okay.
Let's not get hung up on the math. What's your point?
Well, that's my point, that it's even more concentrated than we thought.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I think one is fantastic.
Did anyone think, okay, after Sandy Hook, which arguably is worse than this. I mean, as horrible as this is, Sandy Hook, these kids were younger, and it was just horrible. Nothing happened. After Las Vegas, where nearly three times as many people were killed, or something like that, more than three times. Nothing happened. They couldn't even ban bump stocks.
I was going to say that the thoughts and prayers crowd on Capitol Hill couldn't even ban bump stocks when almost every one of them agreed it should be done. I mean, it was an overwhelming majority of members, certainly of the United States, in favor of banning that, and they can't even do that.
Well, another thing I would like to see is I'd like to see it be more difficult to buy guns, and I'd like to see guns registered so that when people have to buy them, they need to go through some sort of a formal check, and you track the guns, where they are, who owns them, right. Who should own them. And that's just a non-starter with a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm actually okay with people owning handguns for self-defense, owning rifles for hunting, and so on. But I think that there should be limits on this, and every time you propose that, as Scott says, the gun rights people go crazy. And they vote, and they let their legislators know. I mean, maybe one of the solutions is for people who are on the other side of this issue. Maybe they make it more apparent to politicians that they're going to cast their vote. One of the people in our meeting this morning said, "I'm never going to cast a vote for anyone who's got a good rating from the NRA again. Never will." She committed to that on the spot. And, you know, that's an interesting point of view to take.
That's the way some people are about pro-life and pro-choice. You know, that I don't care who or what you are. If you're this, I'm out.
But the other way, another way to look at that is that the negative wins. You're voting against someone for something. I'm voting against someone who's pro-life. That's what that carries the day. I'm voting against someone who is pro-gun control.
It doesn't have to be so absolutist anyway. I mean, this is my plea to the NRA and to the gun people.
The NRA was in favor of getting rid of the bump stocks.
For about a week.
Give up a point. Just once lose a battle. Just once say, you know what, this is important to us, but we know it's important to you, so we'll go ahead and concede this point. Just imagine the good that would do to the debate overall.
Yeah, but it's slippery slope, and that's, you know, that's going to be the argument for everybody on everything.
But it is a slippery slope, and the slope we've slipped down is that everyone has an automatic weapon. I mean, you know, they've always argued NRA against anything because of a slippery slope, and so we really have gone down that slippery slope on the other side.
Yeah. I think as all things, there's a middle ground here.
And also in Trump land, Scott.
Let's talk about it.
It was another terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week. Former Secretary Rob Porter's story only gets worse from an administration standpoint. High-ranking officials in the administration have said or done some crazy things this week that are not getting attention because we're so distracted by other events. Sarah Sanders doesn't know what to say from the podium anymore. And the Democrats are working to get their memo released. No one seems to be talking much about that, but that story continues to go on as well. Eric, I guess if we were going to rank them, how many weeks has the president been president? 58, something like that, whatever it is. This is in the top five. Five.
Where does my adjective fatalistic come from this week? Part of it has to do with the fact that we're not doing anything about guns. But the other thing has to do with the fact that no matter what happens with Trump, he just can't seem to lose the support of this really strong base that he has.
Well, here's Steve Bertrand with his explanation for that.
I don't know if you do know what I'm going to say.
I
think every week like this turns out to be a good week for President Trump because it more normalizes the absolute mania and only ensures that he's going to stay in office.
Yeah, Steve believes
you knew that was coming?
It's weirdly ensures Trump's presidency the craziness because any one of these things would ruin anybody else.
Yeah.
But the totality of them is such a distraction. You don't focus on any of them.
Fake news.
In fact, this morning, I wish I had it in front of me, but there was a news story about that a large number of administrative officials have not have their clearance.
It's over 100, I think.
Yeah, it's over 100, including the kids.
Right.
You know, the Rob Porter thing. I mean, the president.
There goes another week.
I mean, Rob Porter can, you know, and the president going, well, he's a good guy. I hope he's okay. Oh my God.
Okay,
no.
Wait, Scott. But then the president did this week. Remember, Sarah Sanders originally did read a statement sort of denouncing sexual harassment. And then finally, the president was one of those sit-down photo ops, and they're still shooting questions at him about sexual harassment. And he said, I'm against it. It should go without saying, was the phrase.
I know sexual harassment when I do it.
Trust me, if anybody knows.
Those 20 women are lying.
Think about this. He has a porn star who was paid off by his attorney.
It's another bad part of his week.
A few days before the election, a week or so before the election.
Should not talk about the affair they didn't have.
Right. Which he's never, I don't know, people around him have denied it. Has he denied this affair?
I believe he has.
Well, they have not denied that she was paid $130,000.
Right. And so her lawyer, Stormy's lawyer, is saying now that because Trump's lawyer sort of acknowledged the payment, that they have violated the non-disclosure agreement, and so she might now talk.
Everything is off now, and Stormy is going to tell her story, her attorney said. I'm reading from Associated Press. At issue is what happened inside a Lake Tahoe, Nevada hotel in 2006. Blah, blah, blah. When is Melania going to find her voice? When is she once just going to say something of import about any of these things? I'm sure she's humiliated. I know this isn't a big point, considering all the things we're talking about, but I almost feel bad for her, and I think she should say something.
Well, he wasn't a blank slate when she married him.
This happened after
his fifth child by his third wife, just so the fundamentalists understand that number.
Yeah. All right.
And it's also the fundamentalists like Franklin Graham coming out and saying that this guy, you know, I was very proud of the cartoon, frankly, is when I have Franklin Graham saying, you know, traditional marriage is between a man, a woman, and his porn star.
Right.
You know, and the other evangelical saying, well, we're going to give him a mulligan.
It is amazing. Well, he's doing what we want him to do.
I thought was the most honest thing we've heard in a very long time.
Yeah, but it's damning, too.
It says, we don't care if you live by the virtues that you and we all espouse as long as you put forth our agenda. Wow. I mean, and that's the Christians. That's the conservative Christian right in this country. The people who you'd think would say, oh my God, listen to what Scott Stannis just said. We can't have that as our flag bearer. And they said, we'll give him a mulligan. That was their word, mulligan. as long as he pushes forth.
You know, you're forgetting that Barack Obama wore a tan suit once to a news conference.
Oh my God, remember that? I'll never forget that. It was horrifying.
It was not presidential.
It changed
my life. Melania can't speak up because her parents could be deported.
Yeah, there's that story this week too. Hey, listen, right? She may or may not be part of a chain.
Her chain. Her parents have been living here for about a year, helping to raise Barron, which is all great. But the White House was asked on what visa or how are they here. Because it looks like they may be this quote-unquote chain immigration thing where the parents of an American can come and live, which would be politically embarrassing for the administration. So the White House won't say on what legal grounds Melania Trump's parents have been living in the U.S.
And that's okay for them. It astounds me. And I think to Steve's point, I think this is one of those examples. It just normalizes this weird behavior. And we may never get back to what people of a certain age, me, would consider normal, a normal presidency. I don't know that we'll ever have that back because of things like
not
this.
Not until we're done with Oprah.
Like 3 years, let's hope so.
Yeah. No, but that's an interesting point, Scott. I mean, will the presidency recover in America's eyes or in the world's? I don't know.
I think we tend to see reactions to what's happened, right? So Donald Trump could well be seen as a reaction to the first African-American president.
Yeah,
And I'm so you might see others react for the, you know.
It almost couldn't get worse, honestly. I mean,
really?
Seriously.
The pendulum will break if it goes any further. It'll be out the window of nuttiness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, after the parade.
By the way, so let's not talk about the parade, and let's not even talk about $30 million we're up to now? And the president said, I don't know, it depends on how long the parade goes. What did you guys think of the Obama portraits which were released this week?
God.
Let's turn to the cartoonist.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm all for new art, and I think it's exciting. He was a transformative, the Obamas, Michelle and Barack, were transformative figures, clearly, for obvious reasons. And so they went with artists that didn't do the traditional stage kind of, you know, oil painting. But I got to tell you two things. The Barack Obama against the right field fence wall at Wrigley is ridiculous.
It is.
And frankly, the portrait of Michelle I think is terrible. It's amateurish, and it doesn't look like her, which a portrait I suspect should look like her. So I was frankly surprised.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, who am I to disagree with the one artist of the four of us, but I've read other reviews of it, and my own view is that it's kind of awesome.
That's what makes art.
That's what art does, right, Scott?
Van Gogh sold one painting in his lifetime. So
is the president's the only one with leaves in it?
I think so.
If you're walking down, and so the point of my
cow.
Question, sort of the, I mean, because I thought they're provocative. I kind of liked it. The only thing I could see is if you're walking through the portrait gallery and every one of them is sort of a staid, regular, and then President Obama's isn't, then, you know, maybe you brought the wrong song to the concert.
Yeah, maybe you brought the right one.
Yeah, no,
too.
I think...
You're the one that said transformative.
And I think that's important. I thought, I'm not as... offended isn't the right word. I don't care for the portrait of the First Lady. I think Michelle Obama is a striking person and a striking face and strong and strong-willed. And this looks like a bad cover for a high school student drew for a Beyonce cover.
I agree with you that she is more beautiful and strong than this picture conveys.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Illinois, guys. Eric, what was the big story for you this week in the run for governor? I also want to talk about what is on Mike Madigan's doorstep, but just for a minute, on the gubernatorial race, judging by the commercials, I now notice that some of the candidates are picking on my boy Biss.
Daniel Biss, yeah.
So maybe he's moving up and is a viable candidate even more so this week.
Well, I mean, several things are going on. Number one is J.B. Pritzker is still in damage control mode over the FBI wiretap recordings of him talking to Blagojevich about African-American politicians in a way that was... not respectful, you know, referring to Jesse White. I'm sorry, to Jesse White as least offensive.
Jesse Jackson Jr.
Jesse Jackson Jr., I think you can get away with dissing him given what happened to him.
But
calling Emil Jones crass and saying that Jesse White was a little less crass. And so anyway, he's still making his apology tour through. I think that's really derailed his campaign in a lot of ways. Emil Jones is out with a radio ad. He's behind Chris Kennedy's campaign. And then he's bashing bashing Pritzker for that, and I think it's going to hurt him in the African American community. I really do. I think it's a problem. I think that vote is now much more up for grabs than it might have been before. That's really interesting. The fact that Jeannie Ives, the Republican challenger, seems to be getting more and more money. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't seen the latest finance reports, but she's been on the air. She's been on radio and on TV much more than I thought she was going to be, and I think she's making some inroads. The other thing that I thought happened this week that was interesting was Bruce Rauner gave his budget address on Wednesday, and his budget address was filled with promises that, you know, he's going to be, you know, looking for a $1 billion tax cut for Illinois citizens. Now, there was a tax hike that was that happened last year above his over his veto, but he relied on that revenue from that tax hike to, you know, offer a budget that was somewhat plausible this time. And his budget proposal also contains something it's a cost shift to suburban districts, downstate and suburban school districts, making them pay for their own pensions ultimately, which is going to result in higher property taxes, which is sort of part of the shell game that he's playing. He made, a strong pitch for another series of promises like he made 4 years ago, almost as though he weren't actually the governor. So, I mean, I think all those things are very interesting to me. And I think you're right about Biss coming on strong still.
I haven't seen any tracking polls for the Republican race for the last couple of weeks. But Jeannie Ives had that ad that offended a lot of people, and rightfully so. And then, I have to believe that it got her a pretty good bump downstate because now she's doing commercials and begins her speeches. Well, now do I have your attention?
It's
because...
You know, with a wink. And I just think that actually makes it all uglier. It's though I did something that we all know is vile. But hey, it's okay now that I've got your attention. Right there. The end does not justify the means. You got our attention because you were... Because what you did was so terrible. I mean, could we... That commercial should stop right there.
Donald Trump
mind.
Is suing her for copyright infringement. That's how he got all the
traction. She has a line in the National Review. The National Review calls Governor Bruce Rauner the worst Republican governor in the country because he is. And that's
a great
brilliant.
Line. That's a good
brilliant.
Line.
Yeah,
well, good for her.
And he is. He's awful. And that's why I predicted on this podcast months ago that Ives would be a factor, and she definitely is going to be. The fact that she's now got two other big, big money people from the Republican Party or from the conservative side giving her dumping a lot of money into her campaign. Here's the thing. This is what the Republican Party has become. And I have to say, for someone who worked in it as a young man and someone who, until just a few years ago, considered himself a Republican, it's become a very ugly, ugly party. And this is exactly what
I'm
talking about.
So, Eric, if you're a Democrat, do you pick up a Republican ballot and vote for Ives?
No, I don't think you do because you have a choice to make in the Democratic primary.
Okay.
And if you're a Democrat in Cook County, you have a choice to make also in the Cook County Assessor's race, also interesting. And as we speak here today, they're making a decision about whether there's going to be a second. You know, right now there's a challenger to Joe Berrios, who's on the ballot, Fritz Kagi, and then there's Andrea Rayla, who's the second challenger. She's been knocked off the ballot. If she stays on the ballot, Berrios probably wins.
Good
Steve,
God.
Your point is that if you are a Democrat, you vote for Ives to make it
Rauner
easier.
Would probably be the stronger general
right.
election
vote
candidate.
For Ives
but if you play it forward, that's the whole, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because that'll show him, you know, and then he becomes president.
You got Donald Trump.
Right.
I know, Jeannie Ives could be the governor of Illinois if you're not careful. I wanted to talk just briefly, guys, about this convoluted story. There is a young woman. Her name is Elena Hampton, and she worked in Marty Quinn's office. Actually, Kevin Quinn was her direct supervisor. He is the brother of Alderman Marty Quinn. And it looks to me like maybe she did some campaign work for Michael Madigan as well. This Quinn guy, Kevin, was constantly text messaging back and forth with her. He is her direct supervisor. And he is saying things like, I'll just read from some of them. Hey, do you have any idea what I'm going to say? She texts back, I really don't. He says, you are smoking hot. She says, LOL, thank you. He texts, can I ask you a question? Sure. Do you have a boyfriend? I don't. I'm surprised. That's a compliment. Later, I forgot to ask, how did the canvass go for Marwick this past weekend? No response. Later, hey, I'm not sure if you got my note about Marwick and your campaigning. So he's always kind of opening the door with business, but he is constantly texting her over the course of several months about how pretty she is. And later he says, okay, so you don't want to mix work with pleasure? What if we didn't know each other? And I was standing, and this is after she's told him to go away, and I was standing next to you at a Starbucks, and I hit on you. What would you think of that? And it's just unrelenting. Eric, one of your colleagues at the Tribune tweeted this week, reading these exchanges are exhausting. And I imagine women must feel that way, who just can't, the guy won't say no.
And no. The guy won't take no for an answer.
And she definitely says no, and I've read the tweets as well.
Here's my question. Yeah, she does. And she's so professional about it, even though her letter to Mike Madigan was handwritten on lined notebook paper. But I just thought it would be electronically delivered. But
he doesn't have an email.
Mike Madigan does not?
No. Does not do email.
Doesn't do email, doesn't do Facebook, doesn't do anything.
Thank you.
That you can trace things.
How about that? Okay, so my questions are twofold. One is, why are you laughing at me, C. Bertrand?
No, Stan is saying he does nothing that can be traced.
Is this implicate Mike Madigan in any way? And what should the result be of that sort of constant pursuit of affection?
I'll take that, John. I think it does implicate Madigan because he knew about it in November and nothing happened until February, whatever it was.
Well, they say that maybe she asked them to be circumspect about this, and so maybe their idea of being circumspect was doing nothing about it.
Certainly circumspect, isn't it?
Had the activity stopped? Because I thought I read somewhere where the brother went to him and said, quit it, and he quit it.
He quit, yes.
Okay, so...
So what should the result be then? You know, this is an
whatever the result should be. It should be quick, I think. I mean, I think you can't say you can't wait 3 months to do it. You have to act with dispatch on a complaint like that. And you might say, well, you know what? Yeah, he asked her out too many times, but she said no, and he stopped, and that's it. You might say that, or you might say we can't have someone like this in an organization. But you can't wait around until to see what the blowback.
You're in
is.
A position of authority, and all of this has transpired. Do you fire Quinn?
Yeah, I think I let him go.
I do, too. I mean, I think that's pretty easy.
In this moment,
in this day and age, I mean, maybe it's fair or not fair, but it is what it is.
Take the day and age out of it. Because the day and age implies...
20 years ago, you didn't, but today you absolutely do.
That's true. So let's go back 4 years.
Okay.
No, really, let's not go back to Mad Men. Let's go back 3 or 4 years. And in this day and age, there's so much extra weight that comes with all these. There's political pressure, social pressure. So go before that.
Back then, I think... managers would have been advised to manage it rather than fire the person. Hillary Clinton did as much when she had something like that on her own campaign.
That wasn't the way she handled that was not cool.
I don't think it was. So I'm sorry, Steve. I know what you're asking me to do, and I can't do it.
Right.
All I'm saying is today he needs to be fired, and they all need to be embarrassed. And I don't know what it does to Madigan.
I think it reflects poorly on him. And frankly, I think that if the Democratic Party were smart, they would realize that Mike Madigan has really become a millstone around their neck. Now, it's independent of judgment whether he's been effective in manipulating the legislature and hanging on to the majority there, he is going to be tied around the neck of just about every Democratic candidate in this state, and the campaign, no matter what you can say about Bruce Rauner, and I've said a lot of bad things, the one thing that he has succeeded at is he has succeeded in driving Mike Madigan's approval numbers down.
Yeah.
Mike Madigan, I get letters from people all the time, like, it's Mike Madigan, everything is Mike Madigan's fault, everything bad that's happened is Mike Madigan's fault. That is a common thought. So
it's time to do our recommendation. Steve doesn't even have time to do that. He is exiting stage left. We'll get one from him next week. This is the part of the podcast where we tell you something that we are watching, listening to, reading, or eating or drinking. We think you might like them as well. What do you like this week?
A little self-promotion. Listen to this week's edition of the Prickly Sea podcast. I had a guest on. His name is Mark Shea. He's my favorite Catholic blogger. And he does a blog called Catholic and Enjoying It. But he's also...
That's a funny title.
Yeah, well, and he's along the same lines as myself. He is aghast at what he calls the Christianists' backing of a brutal, cruel, and definitely unchristian agenda of this administration. And the conversation is terrific. So go to WGN Plus. Go to Prickly City Podcast.
You need to know that. Yeah, Prickly City Podcast.
Prickly City Podcast, and listen to this week's. And Mark is a great guy, and it was a really interesting conversation.
How about you, Eric Zorn? What do you like?
I really like this new podcast from The Onion, and it's called A Very Fatal Murder. And it's an eight-part...
I'm in.
Yeah, totally.
It's an eight-part Soul. Parody. It's a parody of Serial and all these true crime podcasts, and it's down to the fact that they even parody podcast commercials.
One chilly Thursday morning in May, Haley was found on the floor of the local bottle cap factory that her father worked at. What's more, she was dead. Haley's case fulfilled every one of the requirements we had plugged into Ethel. It was gruesome. It was unsolved. It commented on the ugly underbelly of the American dream, the decline of manufacturing, modern beauty standards, the gig economy,
factory farming. I was going to recommend The Post, not because I think it's the best movie of the year, but if you're looking to see a movie, how can you go wrong with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks? And it resonates in ways that I think it didn't even know it was going to when they made the movie. How important the press is, how interesting it is that the government would push back on a free press. That's not a brand new conversation we're having now. And the way it played out is really interesting and insightful, even if it's not a perfect movie. So The Post was going to be my recommendation. Okay, Eric, so based on what you said, another one of my recommendations will be American Vandal. It's on Netflix. Because American Vandal is the story. It's a parody. It's like one of those parody podcasts, TV shows. And in this case, it's of a kid or somebody who painted a bunch of penises on the cars in the school parking lot. Who did it? Why? How? What was up with this? And so then some students sort of do their documentary about it, interviewing the coach and fellow students. It's really good.
It's
really funny. And it works because Brenda and I watched the whole thing trying to figure out who did it, who painted the penises. And it really doesn't matter what the crime is. It's more the whodunit. But the penises just make it so ridiculous and funny. Do you watch the whole thing?
I did.
So you know who did it, right? You will enjoy this if you can enjoy that. And you should be able to. That's my recommendation of the week. All right. Thank you, Eric Zorn, coming in. Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand exited stage left. Kristen McQuarrie, the editorial writer for the Trib, will join us, I know, again another day. Ben Cortez always does. He's our engineer. Thank you, Ben. Aleph Garris produces The Mincing Rascals. We'll drop another. Oh, go White Sox. We'll drop another podcast.
Company man.
You bet I'm wearing a hat, and I'm not wearing it well. I got to get a better one. But congratulations.
Did you steal
to the
that
White
from
Sox.
A child?
I know. These little hats they handed us just to sort of make sure we all had one are not one that fits all. But we're happy to have the White Sox
the big
on.
Big brain guys like you.
WGN Radio this season. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNRadio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.